Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Welcome to episode 9 of Women in WP. I'm Angela Bowman.
I'm Amy Masson.
And I'm Tracy Epps.
Our guest today is Lisa Stambaugh, who has 20 years plus years experience in web design and development. She's built almost 700 websites and has written one book and writes articles for GoDaddy Garage. We are delighted to have you here today, Lisa.
Thanks. I'm excited to join the fun.
We like to start off each episode by asking our guests to tell us about their journey into WordPress. How did you get started?
Okay, if I can give sort of the very big picture. I finished high school 20 years before web design was a job, and I was an engineer for about 20 years. I have a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering and a master's degree in computer science. So I worked for about 20 years in high tech, and one of my later jobs, I was the director of IT at a big company, and that was the mid-90s, and websites were a new thing, and they said, you must have one, and we were like, okay, I guess we'll learn how to do that. And so I, along with, you know, everybody else in the department I was managing, like, quick, let's learn some HTML and let's figure out what the heck we're doing. And then it became sort of a side hobby for me. It's like, oh, this is fun. I'll do a site for my kids' school, and I'll do a site for the nonprofit I'm on the board of. And I did a site for my father-in-law's company, and they were probably the only, you know, manufacturing shop in the country that had a website in those days, because those guys didn't know what they were doing about that. And then when I decided to leave the high-tech world, web design and some other consulting and related things was a really good freelance business. So I was doing websites in Front Page 95, which people who remember that are like, how is this even possible that that was a tool? Then moved to Dreamweaver, then moved to WordPress. So that was, there was kind of a long route to get there, but never looked back. And I will tell you, interestingly, that when I used to, in the days when I was doing proposals for new sites, I'd say, well, we're using Dreamweaver. And then at some point I said, we can do Dreamweaver or we could do WordPress. Here's the pros and cons of both. And there's obviously now a pretty good sales pitch around WordPress, but at the time people didn't know what it was, or my clients didn't know what it was. And so I'd have to kind of give this song and dance to say, you make the choice, but secretly I'm whispering in their ear saying, let's go this way. And then at some point I stopped giving people a choice. I said, that's it. I'm just specializing in this and full speed ahead. So it was a long path, but I never looked back, you know, very happy to have made that choice.
That's a common path to take, the front page, Dreamweaver, WordPress path. It's many that have gone down that path.
I didn't do front page, but I was doing hand coding like HTML, CSS, and then just taking HTML or like taking WordPress and just like popping it in there, and it works. It's kind of all right.
Yeah, I did HTML, and then when Dreamweaver was go live, I was a go live person. You know, it's no more.
With several hundred WordPress sites under your belt, what have you found to be your favorite tools, either for your business or plugins for managing websites? And are you having to manage many websites these days?
Well, one thing I will say is I do not currently manage all the sites I've ever built. So several years ago, and I'm sure you've heard this from other people, I instituted a more formal care plan service, let's say. And I said, you know, if you want to stay with me, I've been managing your site, doing updates, whatever. If you want to stay with me, now you have to sign up for this additional package of services, backups, security, uptime monitoring, all the plugin updates, all the stuff that you would expect. And I actually lost some people at that time because they didn't want to pay for, I was doing this, many of this, much of this backend stuff for free and billing them for the work to work on their site. And when I said, now I want you to pay me for this backend stuff, why should I do it for free? It's, by the way, very important stuff. I lost some people, and that's fine. That was, you know, they make their informed decisions. Some of them came back months and more than that later and said, my site's been hacked. What do I do? And I said, oh gosh, too bad. But by the way, I actually, if somebody leaves me, I save a backup so I can restore it to that backup. But if somebody else was editing the site after that, I can't really help them recover that. So, so in terms of managing, you know, I have a set now of about 140 or so that I have ongoing care and feeding, including my own sites. You asked about tools, I think. And one of the things I decided on kind of early on in my WordPress journey was that I wanted to, as you say, put together a suite of stuff that I could be pretty good at. And that, of course, would make me more efficient and more reliable. And one of the things I went with was Genesis, if you're familiar with that, by Studio Press. So Genesis is basically, you know, a set of themes, like the mothership theme and all the bolt-on other themes. And they had, at the time, what I thought was, you know, great bulletin board, networking system. There were other developers. There were plugins. And I looked at several other comparable platforms at the time, but I said, you know what? I like this one. I'm going to go all in. I bought the entire set of themes, which at the time was probably only a couple $100, a few $100.
I've got them all too.
And then you can get new ones as they come up. And what I really liked about using that system, you know, I'm sure we've all had this. Somebody comes to you and says, here's a theme I found that I really like. It's exactly what I want. And I look at it and go, first of all, I don't like the way it looks. Secondly, this is some no-name guy. He may not support it if there's a bug the next time WordPress is updated. There's no other community of people using it that I could reach out to. And so I really liked, I really took the approach that if somebody would come to me and say, here's a theme I really like, I said, what do you like about it? We like that there's a slider and there's three columns and there's a video and there's a footer and there's this. I'd say, well, I could build you that with this Genesis theme. And once you learn how to add your own widgets or move stuff around, and if you can edit the CSS, I learned that you can take any of their themes and build anything I've ever had to build. So every site I've built in the last however many years, 9 years, is built on Genesis. And they continue to upgrade it. There's a lot of support. There are whole sites where people blog about, here's how to customize the such and such thing, you know. So that to me was a great move. And when I talk to people who are new to the business and they say, well, what, you know, what's your advice? I say, pick a development environment that you can get to know pretty well, whichever one it is, I don't care. Get to know it pretty well, have your standard set of plugins that you install with every site, and go forth. So I use Gravity Forms. I have a developer license. You can install it a million times for the same cost. That's a really good system. For I have WordFence. I have some other plugins for specific things that I really like. I have one called Accordion Shortcodes, which lets you do, you know, expandable accordion type lists. I mean, everybody has kind of their own list. And I personally like to stick with plugins that I see have a large audience, because then I'm deluded, but I want to think it'll be around for a while, it'll be supported. It's not gonna, the owner or the author will tend to want to keep it compatible with updates to WordPress, etc. And so when I have to get a new plugin for something, I go look at the repository and see how many times it's been downloaded, when it was last updated. You know, so I tend to stick with mainstream stuff unless there's some really specific thing that somebody needs that there aren't many options.
Well, after, I know you've built so many websites, and after doing that for so many years, you've shifted your business into more just care and maintenance side of things. What made you decide to make that shift, and how was the transition?
So it's interesting, and I mean, it's a good question, because as you know, in 20 years, the business has changed a lot in terms of people's options. They could hire one of us, they could do it themselves on Squarespace or Wix or any of the other do-it-yourself tools. They may have a child who's in college who wants to do it, or an employee. So I found that in some ways, a lot of people, I don't mean this in a negative way, but they just did not see the value added by a professional designer, and then they'd try and nickel and dime you down. You know, well, I can get it for half the price over here, or I could do it myself for $150 a year. And so I got tired of that sort of nonsense. Was one thing. Second thing is that because there are many more people in the business, it's a good thing for consumers that they have more competition, but it also becomes a good thing for people to specialize and maybe not do everything. Do the parts you really like the best. That's what I always tell people. If you don't like doing that part, don't do that part. Partner with somebody who likes doing that part. And I do really like doing design, and I like parts of all of it, but I really, really enjoy the care plan work because I feel like I'm in a very trusted business partner relationship, and people count on me, and people come to me all the time with problems. They go, man, you saved my butt again. And it could be anything from, it doesn't happen very often that my sites get hacked, but let's suppose the site got hacked. I can get it back. Let's suppose there's a problem with the hosting company. I track it down. They get those spammy, quick, renew your hosting with us now from their not provider. And they send it to me. What should I do? Throw it away. I had an email this morning from, you know, that we're watching you. We know you've been watching porn and send us money on Bitcoin.
Yep, had that one.
She was in a panic. She says, what should I do? I said, you should delete it. Just ignore it. But I like that I have a strong relationship with this core group of people who rely on me for all these things. I'm happy to answer questions. They trust me. They don't argue with me about why I'm charging them money to do X. And so that's been a really fun thing to develop. When I started in this business in the town I live in, which I'm in Silicon Valley, which I'm in the outskirts of Silicon Valley. But 20 years ago, I was the only game in town in a company, in a city of 200,000 people. I was the only person with a business doing this. Now there are things have changed, but there are many more people. And at the time, as more competition, some people similar to me came in, one of my differentiating factors was that I was a little bit older, or maybe a lot older. And I had clients who were my age, who were technophobic, didn't understand what the younger people were saying to them, felt like, you're talking over my head. And so I could relate to them, and they were very comfortable with me. I still have a lot of clients that are women my age. They have their own business and they trust me. They don't trust the people their kids' age. So the care plan business is great. One thing that I'm not ready to retire, but I'm heading in that direction, is I wanted to get out of so much work where it's very intense. You're on call for, if you're in the middle of a design with somebody and they're sending you email in the middle of the night and it's got to be launched by this certain day, I can't be away for the day. I can't go out of town. I can't go babysit my grandson. Can't do a lot of things. So I wanted, in the last couple of years, I really thought about how can I move more towards work that I enjoy in this market space that is not so time sensitive. And one of the things that I have always done with clients, which I now know many web pros do not do, is that I write content. I know plenty of pros who, they're brilliant programmers, they can design, and they say to the client, you have to go write it yourself or hire someone to write it. Call me when you're done and I'll put it all together. And that's fine. There's plenty of content writers. But most of the people that I have encountered who are content writers are not also web developers. And so they don't quite have the same perspective. And so I really set out to set up a little writing service of content for people who have hired someone else to design their site, but the designer doesn't write, if that makes sense. So I thought, I realize now I've been doing two jobs, developer job, writer job. So now I'm doing writing work for clients of other developers in some ways. And the developers are happy to refer people to me because they know I design websites and I understand what they're doing. And they're also happy because sometimes you can wait months for that content and you don't get paid all of the money till the content's done and the site is launched. So if they can hire somebody to do content that gets the site launched earlier, they get paid earlier, they're happy. So my writing business, and probably the thing I'm most proud of, is the name, which is muchadoaboutyou.com. And it really focuses on not just writing content, but writing content based on your USP, right? Your unique selling proposition. And forming content that explains the benefits of working with you and why you're so great from the perspective of the value to the customer, to the reader. And honestly, because you can read about pages all day long and many of them suck. They're terrible. They don't really say, hire me because here's the value I'm going to give you. Here's how I'm going to help you make more money and all that. And so I really kind of fine-tune this process around content, around, you know, about me, why choose me or why choose us for an organization, why join us, case studies, FAQs. So all the, not the part about the service somebody is selling, the part about why hire you to provide the service they're selling. So that's been an interesting project over the last year to kind of launch that. And I'm really enjoying still being involved with websites, but doing this different part of it as a more task that's hopefully perceived to be of value.
You know, that really resonates with me, the whole, like, what do you provide? It's because I do a lot of user experience stuff. So that's the whole idea and the crux of what, as a user experience designer, it's thinking not like, what features are we building? But it's like, why are we building these features? And reframing it instead of like, we can do all these things, but is that going to be a benefit to the user? And that is a really, like, I've noticed, especially since, you're right, like the environment of web development has changed, because anyone, there's low barrier to entry. You can like make your own drag and drop site. But so that gets lost a lot. So that's really nice to hear that, just that values, because like that is what makes people stand out for sure.
Well, and I think that people, when they're writing about themselves, okay, some people don't like to, they think they're bragging or they don't know how to present themselves. They're like, people don't care about me. They care about the work I'm doing. And part of the messaging is take what you're good at or what your experience is and show why it's a benefit to them. So when I talk about why should you hire me as a writer? Yes, I would say I wrote a book and I write articles and I've been ghostwriting for clients for years. But really the message is I have experience, blah, 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 that lets me tell your story in a way that resonates with your readers. Now they're interested because now I'm talking about their story and their readers. And oh, by the way, I have some writing experience. And it's been a real fun process to work with people, especially when they have a new business and they're still trying to formulate, how do I sell myself? And they come away afterwards and say, wow, I never would have thought to say it that way, but it really makes me look better than I thought I was.
It's really good advice.
But so that's been really fun. So right now, my work is, you know, split between the care plan, maintenance, backend, babysitting, take care of whatever people need work, and doing the content writing. And I'm doing, interestingly, a fair amount of work informally sort of coaching people who want to get into the business. And in part, that's because my children, who are in their 30s, have friends, or, you know, I have my children's friends and my friends' children are all in this 20s and 30s, and some of them are looking at this as a career. So it's really fun to work with them. I'll tell you one funny story about that. Rotary, which, you know, Rotary is a national organization, and they have a big chapter here in Fremont. And they approached me, it's probably 4 years ago, about bidding on doing their website. I'm not a member, but a lot of people there know me because a lot of my clients are members, and that's how my name came up. So I do the proposal and gave him a copy of my book and we did all this stuff. And then the guy gets back to me and he says, we've narrowed it down to you and one other person. We like you. You're experienced. A lot of our members know you. We think you can do a great job. On the other hand, this other guy is younger. He's new to Rotary. He's starting his own business. It could be a really great opportunity for him. I said, great, give it to him. I won't be offended at all. I totally get it. So in the end, they hired me. And afterwards, the coordinator says, can I share your proposal with him and his proposal with you so you guys can learn from each other? And I don't want to be too snobby and say, what am I going to learn about writing a proposal from a 27-year-old who's just learning, getting in this business? But I said, sure, of course, great idea. So he sends us the proposals, like a mutual email. I see it immediately and say, oh, it's a classmate of my son. I've known this kid since he was in kindergarten. And he has an unusual name, so it was easy to verify. Bobby. So now I have to write to him and say, hey, how are you? It's Mark's mom. This is great. You're going in this business. We should meet for coffee, you know? And, you know, over in my head, I'm going, which would be worse, to lose a project to your friend's mother or to lose a project to your child's friend? There's, you know, I think he felt kind of badly. And at one point we were talking and he's trying to impress me. And he says, you know, I was building websites by the time I was in sixth grade. And I said, you know that I built your school's website when you were in second grade, right? And I gave him some coaching and he's fine. He's on his own. But that is such a fun opportunity to get people when they're early to the business and try and help mentor them or coach them. Especially women, of course. And I don't know if any of you, do you have any numbers of what percentage the web design world is of women or the WordPress world?
I don't have any.
I don't have any either. I don't know, but that's something that.
And I don't think the stats are right that exist, actually.
Yeah, I agree. Because we've been noticing like one thing's like some of the people that have kind of come out of the woodwork, you know, so to speak, about this podcast, it's like they've all been working in the behind the scenes, and they might not be the people taking the quizzes because they don't know that the quizzes are there. They might not be at the WordCamps because they don't know the WordCamps are a thing. So, because I didn't know it was a WordCamp for many, many years of that. So yeah, we don't have any accurate, any stats on that, but it would be really good to know.
I mean, I will tell you that when I first got into it, which was back when it was corporate and I was managing an IT department full of men, they had their own problems with a woman being in charge, but that was not my problem.
I bet.
It was really fun.
Oh, I was going to ask you, did you learn anything from his proposal?
I learned that he was pretty good at the BS and he had a lot of fluffy stuff that was not, not really about, here's the value I can provide to you. And so he had beautiful, fancy PowerPoint with, I went to Berkeley and this, that, and the other, and my partner, he had another guy. We do all these things. And it was a lot of salesy stuff. My proposals are very much, here's what we're going to build. Now, here are details about SEO and your email and hosting and this, that, and the other, and content. And so I was really trying to encourage him to back off the hype and, you know, show me the content, the meat. But as I was going to say, when I first really got into this and I was in a very, you know, male-dominated environment, and anybody going into web work was almost all guys, as far as I remember, and they wanted to be called webmaster. And I always thought that sounds that was too much like Dungeons and Dragons. And honestly, when I went to college, I played Dungeons and Dragons. I used to paint those little figurines. And I married somebody who was a D&D guy, so I really can't whine about that. But I didn't see myself in that title, and web mistress sounded even worse. And so I was kind of joking. I said, I'm the web diva. And that kind of stuck. And I actually have a registered trademark on that now. So I have to occasionally send cease and desist letters to people who try and use it. Somebody in Texas a few years ago changed her business name from Website Tailor to Web Diva. And I had to say, you can't do that. And here's why. And she filed with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to cancel my trademark. And I personally did all my own legal work and got that squashed and dismissed. But, I mean, so that is my brand, I guess. And you also have to remember, even if we think web development is more men than women, I spent 20 years in jobs where I was the only woman. I was the only woman in my EE classes in college. I was the only woman in my grad school classes, and that was computer science. It was in the early 80s. Okay, now mind you.
Yeah, even when I was in my first years in college, I was at MSOE, Milwaukee School of Engineering, and I was in computer engineering and electrical engineering technology, and that was in the late 90s. I was the only girl in many of those classes. So that didn't change at much at all.
Sadly. So I was the only, so it was EE undergrad, so EECS. So I'm the only woman. I was the only woman in my internships. I was the first, one of my summer internships, I was at a civilian public works office on a naval base in San Diego. So it was only for the summer. And I got there, I was the first woman engineer. There was no women's bathroom in the engineer's building.
Wow.
So I had to go next door to the marketing. Thank God it was only for the summer, but I didn't drink any coffee that summer. Didn't go anywhere.
Deal breaker.
So my exactly. So my first job out of college, my first full-time job out of college was at Hewlett Packard. And again, first woman engineer in a lab of 200 guys. Also, first engineer to get pregnant, first engineer to have a baby, first engineer to fight to maintain I was managing a project when I went on maternity leave. And I was only going to be gone for 2 months. And they said, we have to give your project to someone else to manage. I said, you can't do that. That's discrimination. I'll manage from home. We didn't have computers hooked up to work at home. But I said, well, be on the phone. We'll figure it out. I don't live that far from work. And they said, no. And I said, well, let me remind you that project manager X over here was on disability and home for 6 weeks because he had heart surgery. And you didn't take his project away. So if you took my project away, there might be legal ramifications.
Oh, yeah.
And so at that point, we had email inside the inside Hewlett Packard, but you couldn't reach it from your home computer. And the solution was to give me a monitor and a modem, and I had to get a second phone line, and then I could call the email computer, email server, and it would call me back. And so that's how I was able to read my email and manage my project for 2 months while I was on maternity leave. And the people at work figured out I had gone to the hospital because I didn't answer email one day. So they're calling the hospital and I answer the phone. It's like, I can't talk to you. My mother doesn't know I'm in labor yet. So I came from this environment, you know, where I was such an anomaly that going into a business where there, let's say there's 25 or 30% women. Wow. That's a lot of women, you know. The other funny thing, so in my computer science degree was at Stanford, and at that time they did not have undergrad CS, only grad school, and it was the math department. And there was this ongoing joke in our class, which is, you're the affirmative action entry. Not because I was a woman, it's because I was the only EE undergrad. Everybody else was a math major. And so I really liked the fact that I was the affirmative action for a completely different reason. So, it worked out pretty well.
So I have a question, especially coming from engineering and IT, what kinds of things skills that you sharpened in those years that you've been able to apply to your career and how it has shifted now?
Fundamentally, engineering, and you said you went to engineering school. Engineering is about problem solving. And when I talk to students and I talk to career days and various things, I'm actually going to speak at UC San Diego in a couple of weeks. I went there and I'm going to be part of like an alumni speaker series in the engineering school. So I'm going to talk about advice for women going into engineering technology. But engineering provides you with such a solid base of problem solving skills, research skills, being able to articulate your solution in a way that, in a more traditional situation, maybe an engineer is designing something that will be built on a production line, possibly in another country. They have to be able to articulate, communicate what they have done in a way to transfer knowledge. And so all those skills still apply. If we are not we aren't problem solvers above everything else, right? The client says, I need my site to do this, or to sell this, or to reach these people, or to take money, or enter a form, or whatever, we have to solve the problem. And we figure out what tools are at our disposal. Then we find a way to articulate to the client what we've done. We have to articulate, if we are writing content, we have to articulate to the readers or the consumers of the site how this works, what the benefit is, all these skills transcend from one job to the next. One thing which helped me tremendously was having worked in corporate and having been in management and worked at several companies is the knowledge about running a business and talking to other people about running their business. So I get questions. I have clients, they start a new business, they don't understand anything about finance or taxes, or should I get an LLC or an S-corp? I know all that stuff because between the corporate world and my business, I've been exposed to it. And so I feel like having any work experience in any field, engineering or otherwise, can be transferred to this business because we are pretty much all running our own businesses. We ought to know what we're doing. And a lot of the articles, a number of the articles that I write for GoDaddy are really about how to run your web business and how to use business skills to help your clients beyond just programming and building their beautiful website. So there's that.
I would just like to say that in tagging along on that, that I think that's a really good point, and a good point of comparison with that younger person that you were competing against is that, and it's not something I've considered, though I have considered like my own business background and corporate background helping me a lot with my clients, but a lot of these new people coming on board with wanting to build websites for businesses have never worked in a business.
That's true.
And they're just learning coding and they're coming in building sites and they've never had a real job, or maybe they had, you know, a real kind of relatable job and relatable experience.
The other thing, having, you don't need to have had 20 years in corporate America, but even a few years, you learn communication, you learn the soft skills, you know, coaching people. And I learned in part of my management training, like, we never use the word problem. It's always challenge or issue. And right, learning how to communicate with people in a way that makes them feel like you're on their side and you're collaborating. The thing that's been for me super fun in this business is how much I have learned from the clients about whatever, whether it's acupuncture or landscape maintenance or dentistry or orthopedics or professional organizing. I mean, I've worked with people in so many fields that I've learned, not like I'm an expert, but I can be conversant. And so when somebody says to me, professional organizer is a good example. I've done websites for a couple of people in that field. And someone says to me, that's what they do. I can have a conversation. I know what that means. I can understand what their challenges are. And so I think being in this business, anybody self-employed who works with a variety of clients learns a lot that just makes them a better person out in the world.
I totally agree. Yeah, I've learned a lot from my clients over the years about so many things that I never thought that I would have any knowledge about. So it's fun. And that's, I know we talked in our last episode, which hasn't published yet, but about having your niche and the benefits of that. But I think there's the opposite side. The benefit of being a generalist is you get so much of an education on all of these businesses and these, you know, websites that you wouldn't otherwise have.
What I did find too is that certain fields, certain not fields in our business, but client fields, are really good for specializing in because they naturally draw in business. And I'll give you an example. I did a website, this is many, many years ago now, for an orthopedic surgeon, a practice of orthopedic surgery in our town. And then one of those doctors went to a practice in the next town over and they had a crappy website and he said, hey, hire my web person. And I did that site. And somewhere after I had like three or four orthopedic practices, one of those doctors was the president of the California Orthopedic Association for a year, the COA. And he brought me in to do their site. And then I started getting calls from orthopedic practices all over the state saying, we saw the COA site, we want you. And I've done enough orthopedic in the Bay Area, in the San Francisco Bay Area. Half the time, a practice will say, we have a new doctor. What's the doctor's name? Dr. X. I say, oh, Dr. X used to work at Oakland Bone and Joint. I have his bio already. And the people would move around, and I have quite a few also in San Diego. And doctors move practices and I already know who they are, or they move and I get hired. And so it's a super interesting, not to say incestuous, but everybody is very well connected in that field and they network highly and they're busy professionals and they rely on other people's recommendation. Work walks in the door. Sometimes it walks out the door too, because these practices have what they call a practice manager, who's sort of the operations business person managing everything. When a practice manager that I work with goes to another practice, they might fire their web person and bring me in. And then it works the other way around, right? I'm at a practice, a new practice manager comes in, they drop me and they bring in their web person. And so you have to, you know, kind of deal with that aspect of it. But I know way more about knees and hips and replacements than I probably want to. I hope never to contact these people on a professional basis where I need their service.
Well, I think one of the things your story just illuminated is how important building these relationships are, because, you know, those practice managers come in and they want you or they want their person. And that's, you know, I think less to do with their, you know, particular skill, but with their relationship with that person and how they have this level of trust. And I think that's something that you've really illustrated that you do with your clients. And I think we all do try to do that with our clients. But going back to a comment you made earlier about these young people and coming out and knowing how to program, one of my pet peeves is, you know, these programmers or developers coming out, but they don't know how to run a business. And you can't do this job and have clients if all you know how to do is code. Being able to code is not the same as running a business.
Well, and even just the whole idea of like, if you're just like, nope, this is the thing, and not getting any feedback, not knowing how to communicate that or like understand a client on a deeper level to like dive deep and to figure out like, okay, well, what are the benefits? Like you said, like, what are they offering? Why should they choose them? Like that kind of viewpoint on things, when I'm just like, I can just code this thing and I just learned how to do this thing and I can do this now.
If I may bring the topic over to my book, because I want to talk about why I wrote that book. So the long title is Web Diva Wisdom, How to Find, Hire, and Partner with the Right Web Designer for You. Not a technical book at all, completely technology agnostic. It's a book, it's 5 years or so since it was published. And I wrote this book because most of my clients were small business owners. A, they knew nothing about building a website, but B, they really didn't have a very good knowledge of why they wanted a website, who they were trying to reach with the website, and what they wanted the website to do. And so the book has several sections. The first part is deciding whether to hire a pro or do it yourself. Can you do the following? Do you want to do the following? Do you, et cetera. Then the next part is a whole slew of homework. What are your objectives for the site? How are people going to find the site? What's your marketing plan for the site? Budget, of course, and timeline. Who's your audience? What does the audience care about? This goes back to the USP. Once the site is launched, how are you going to advertise it to people? What's your social media plan? So there's all this, I call it homework. And then the next section is how to hire somebody. If you're going to hire somebody, how do you evaluate their website? What should you look for in a proposal? What should be in a contract? How do you negotiate a budget? And I say things in there like, go ahead and talk to several people and get several proposals. And when you pick somebody, be polite and send the other three a nice thank you note and say, thanks for bidding. I've gone with someone else. I appreciate your time. That's mom teaching you manners, right? That's not really how to run a business, but that's how my kids were raised, right? You write thank you notes. And so, and then the book says, okay, now you've hired somebody, after you do the contract, here's the process. Here's how you can make it more efficient for your web pro. Gather all your content together at once. Why the pros and cons of sending a separate email with everything versus a bullet list. How to request changes. What is reasonable to expect in timelines. And the book gets all the way to the end and says how to fire your web designer, or what if you're closing your business, or what if you're selling your business? Do you sell the domain name on the website? So it's all about the life cycle of working with a web pro, no technology, which my intent was to say this would work for anybody. And also I won't be obsolete if I'm still referring to WordPress 3.5 five or
yeah, whatever. So could we buy this in bulk? Because I would like to send this to all clients and potential clients because
me
that,
too.
Right?
Yeah, every client, before we start working together, read this book.
Yeah, that's well, okay, amazing.
So here's what happens. So if somebody comes to me, this has been true since the book, somebody comes to me and hires me, I give them a copy of the book and say, now go do all the homework in chapter two before we do anything. And so that's gratifying because A, I'm getting all this. This is a one step up from an intake questionnaire, which many people have a really good, solid questionnaire they ask people. But this is do the homework. And the book is a lot of bullet lists and all that stuff. And I can give you information offline. I mean, it's on Amazon, but if you really want to buy a whole bunch, we can talk about a more efficient way to do that. The book, so this is a side thing about the book. I personally think the book is useful. I would like to think that people will buy it, but I think Amy mentioned this, you don't get rich making a book. You know, every book that's sold at Amazon is $3.75 in my pocket. Or as I say, every book sold is a trip to Starbucks.
Don't spend it all in one place.
That's more than I make in my book. So,
but
like a fortune.
The book is overly impresses people, perhaps, and has opened the door to other things, speaking and other writing opportunities. And it's been helpful. And it was a good exercise in learning how to communicate with clients in a way that they understand, right? Because I'm sure you've all worked with people that say, my previous web guy or some other web guy used a bunch of techno gobbledygook. I don't know what he was talking about. And he made me feel stupid. I don't want to deal with that. And I make a big effort to not be that person.
Well, you're definitely a pioneer in this field. And it's been so interesting to talk to you today. Before we go, do you want to tell everybody where we can find you online?
Well, my main business website is Collective Discovery, and that will cross-link to everything else. The book is webdivawisdom.com, and my writing service is muchadoaboutyou.com. So if you start with collectivediscovery.com, you can find everything else.
Well, yeah, thank you so much.
This was fun.
Thank you so much for your time. This was really great. I love it. I could talk about this stuff all day.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or join our Facebook group. Not already subscribed? Well, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes. Did you know that you could help support the Women in WP podcast? If you head on over to our Patreon page, you'll find additional content and some cool perks if you want to set up a monthly donation of a dollar or more. And finally, you can find all show notes, links, and transcriptions at our website at womeninwp.com. Until next time.